student Craig Gilner. You called him before at Arjunon Hospital Psychiatric Facility in Brooklyn? I'm Craig's licensed therapist, and I'm right here with him. Would you like to speak with him? She nods. Here you go, Craig. I take the cell phone. It's smaller than mine, more buzzy. Hello?
Craig, why'd you hang up on me?
His booming voice is light and gentle, almost laughing.
I thought I was in trouble. I thought I was being expelled. You called me, you know, in the hospital.
Craig, I called you because I got a message from one of our teachers. I just wanted to tell you that you have the school's full support in everything you're going through, and that we're more than willing to have your semester repeated, or given over the summer, or for work to be provided for you where you are now if you should miss enough days to warrant that.
Oh, we don't pass judgment on our students for being in the hospital. My goodness, Craig.
No? But it's like a psychiatric...
I know what kind of hospital it is. You think we don't have other kids in these situations? It's a very common problem among young people.
Oh. Thanks.
Are you doing okay?
I'm doing better.
Do you know when you'll be leaving?
I don't want to tell him Thursday and then have it be Friday, or next Thursday, or next year. Soon, I say.
Okay. You just hang in there, and whenever you come back, we'll be waiting for you at Executive Pre-Professional.
Thanks, Mr. Janowitz. And I picture it in my mind. Me going back to school. My little group of friends, only they're not even my friends anymore, buffered by this new collection of girls who like me because I'm depressed, and teachers who are sympathizing, and the suddenly nice principal. It's something I want to get excited about, but I can't.
See, was that so bad? Dr. Minerva asks.
And I have to admit that it wasn't. But it was kind of like getting told that the prison is happy that you've been granted a temporary reprieve, but we'll be right here with open arms to take you in when you come back.
The plan right now is to discharge you Thursday, Craig, and I'll be here to talk to you on Wednesday, all right?
Dr. Minerva asks.
I shake her hand and thank her.
I tell her what I tell her when I feel really good about talking to her, which is that she knows how to do her job. Then I go back to my room and draw some brain maps. I'm excited for tonight, for Armelio's big card tournament.
Chapter 35.
Okay, says Armelio. Everybody here?
We're back in the activities lounge. Johnny, Humble, Ebony, and the professor are here. Everyone shaved today. It turns out that the shaving rule is only enforced on weekdays, and they look 10 times better. Even Rolling Pin Robert pacing the halls outside looks serviceable. I'll have to remember that. Shaving can make even a psych patient look good.
Huh. Johnny exhales. Bobby's still at his interview.
Yeah, Ebony says. Craig lent him a shirt. You're so nice, Craig.
Thanks.
When are you going to do more of your art?
Maybe tonight, after cards.
That's right, buddy. Cards is what we need to focus on,
Armelio announces. He stands at the head of the table, which is covered with paint drops, crayon marks, and ink smears over uneven wood. In the middle is a plastic container with the buttons, separated into 4 even partitions. It looks like at some point the buttons were ordered by size or color, but now they're all mixed up, every conceivable hue, shape, and ornamentation. They look like jewels.
I don't want any of my buttons missing at the end, Joni says from the back.
She's at the other table, reading a romance novel and supervising.
That's right. We're still looking for the blue button bandit, Humble says. Anybody who can suddenly keep their pants up, we're going to be very suspicious. Watch out for Solomon, that means. And Ebony.
I told you once, stupid, to stop talking about my pants.
Okay, everybody ready?
Armelio asks.
Take your buttons.
Our hands dive into the middle of the table, grabbing fistfuls. We pour the buttons in front of us and use our fingertips to spread them into a 1-button-thick layer. Armelio gets to judge whether we have an equal amount.
Humboldt put back 6 buttons. Ebony put back 10. Johnny, what's going on, buddy? You have like 200 buttons too many.
I got a button bonus, Johnny says. And just then, Bobby comes into the activity room. He moves with his normal loping gait, leaning back with my shirt on. He stops at the end of our table, makes sure he has our attention, raises his right hand, shakes it in the air like he's doing a magic trick, and then slams both of his fists down on the table so his arms make a V shape, as if he were chairman of the board. He grins.
I got it.
Silence holds the room. Joni starts the clapping from the back, slowly, but with reverence and purpose. Then Armelio joins in, and the tempo starts to spiral.
All right!
Congratulations!
Hooray for Brooklyn scumbags!
Bobby! Bobby!
In a small room, 8 people clapping can be a lot. The posters seem to shake with the applause. As it gets louder, there's howling and hooting and cheering. Johnny gets up and gives Bobby a bear hug, the kind that you can see between 2 men who've known one another for 20 years, who've been Fiend 1 and Fiend 2, for whom one's victory counts just as much for the other.
Bobby, buddy, you the man!
Armelio walks over to the hugging pair and smacks Bobby's back, nearly toppling Bobby and Johnny.
Wait a minute,
Bobby says. He extracts himself from the hug and holds up his right hand.
Before we get too crazy, 'cause I see the buttons are out, I gotta thank this young man over here.
He walks toward me.
This kid literally gave me the shirt off his back. This blue one right here. And he didn't know me from Adam. And there ain't no question, without him, I wouldn't have gotten this home. This new home.
I stand up, and Bobby hugs me, his big bony hands wrapping around my back, and I feel the smooth old skin of his cheek and the well-knit fabric of my shirt doing a better job on him than it ever did on me. I think about how much this means to this guy, about how much more important it is than going to any high school or getting with any girl or being friends with anybody. This guy just got a place to live. Me? I have one. I'll always have one. I don't have any reason to worry about it. My stupid fantasies about ending up homeless are just that. The fact is that my parents will take me in any time, anywhere. But some people have to get lucky just to live. And I never knew I could make anybody lucky. If Bobby can get a place to live, I think, then I can get a life worth living.
Thank you, kid,
Bobby says. It's nothing, I mumble. Thanks for the tour.
All right, guys, we gonna play cards or what?
Armelio asks, but Bobby stops him.
One more thing. I'm really sorry, Craig, but I accidentally fell in something on my way back from the interview.
He turns around.
Wait a minute.
There's a giant piece of dog shit ground into the back of my shirt, right above his belt.
I can't believe I didn't smell it. Did I touch it when I hugged him?
Bobby, it's okay. My mom can wash it out.
It ain't real.
Bobby reaches back and pulls it off, throws it at me. It bounces off my shirt, a tie-dye t-shirt that everyone on 6 North likes, and lands on the table in the buttons.
It's plastic. I've had it since the 80s. Ha! I love it.
Armelio cracks up.
Holy crap! Look at that! It looks like something my mom would leave in my bedroom!
Everyone stops, turns.
President Armelio, we did not need to know that, says Humble.
Your mother would defecate in your bedroom? The professor asks.
Who said that?
Armelio asks.
I was talking about plastic. What's the matter with you?
Everybody, just cool it a little,
says Joni, standing up with her book at her side.
Let's have fun, but keep calm.
All right, who gets the duty button?
Humble holds up the poop.
I think it counts for 2.
Bobby sits down and we ante up. The game is poker, 7-card stud. I'm no good at it. The hands start and people begin betting crazy, throwing in 3 or 4 buttons right at the beginning. I can't match them. I have a limited number. and I don't seem to be getting any good hands. So I fold. I fold three times in a row. The third time, Johnny says,
"You might as well bet. It's just buttons."
"Yeah," Humble says. "Let me show you a secret." He reaches into the button container and takes out a handful.
"See?"
"I see," Armelio says, looking over his cards. "Don't think that's not cheating, Humble. Any more and you're out."
I laugh and bet six buttons.
"What am I out of exactly?" Humble asks Armelio. "The button jackpot?"
"Be nice," the professor says.
"Oh, listen to her." Humble jerks his thumb.
"Trying to be the mediator."
He leans into me.
"Don't let her grandma look fool you. She's a real hustler."
"Excuse me?"
The professor puts down her cards.
"What do you mean, grandma?"
"Nothing. You just have that little old granny look about you, to lull people into your trap of playing good cards."
Humble gestures at himself disbelievingly.
"You're saying I'm old."
"I'm not. I'm saying you're a grandma."
"Humble, apologize," Joni says from the back.
"Why, grandmas are wonderful things."
"For your information, I'll have you know," the professor says, "that unlike certain people around here, I act my age."
"Oh, so now I'm a liar?"
Humble asks, standing up.
"We all know that's what you are," says the professor.
"People," Joni warns.
"If I'm a liar, you know what you are?"
"What? You better not call me old, because I'll take this cane and whack you in the head right in front of everybody."
"You ain't taking nothing of mine."
Ebony holds her cane close. Quietly, she has far and away the most buttons.
"You're a yuppie,"
Humble yells, and he picks up the dog dew and throws it at her head.
"A stupid yuppie with no respect for anybody."
"Eh,"
the professor holds her face.
"He broke it. He broke my nose."
The dog dew has bounced all the way across the room, and Joni jumps over it lightly as she beats a hasty retreat.
"Uh-oh," Armelio says. "Now you guys did it. We were having such a good card game."
Harold comes into the room with two big guys in light blue jumpsuits, Joni behind them. Humble raises his hands.
"What? I didn't do it."
"Come on, Mr. Coper," Harold says.
"I can't believe it," Humble says. "She insulted me. It wasn't even my dog poop. I didn't have the weapon."
He starts pointing at Bobby.
"He's an accomplice. If I'm going, he's going."
"Humble, you have 3 seconds to get over here."
"All right, all right."
Humble throws down his cards.
"You guys have fun with your buttons."
He's escorted out by Harold and the security guards, getting a resounding slap on the butt from the professor. She still has one hand on her face, claiming that she's bleeding. But when she removes her hand, there isn't any kind of mark. Joni sits back down at her table.
"You all saw what happened. He attacked me," the professor says.
"Yeah, yeah, we saw Doomba,"
says Armelio.
"Excuse me?"
"You're the Doomba. We all know you are."
"What's a Doomba?" I ask.
"If you're asking, maybe you're a Doomba, too."
Armelio looks mad. This is the first time I've seen it.
"Huh,"
Johnny breathes.
"Craig ain't no Doomba," Bobby says. "He's on the level."
"Aren't I the winner yet?"
asks Ebony.
"How can you have so many buttons?"
asks Armelio.
"You're not winning any hands."
"It's 'cause I don't overbet,"
Ebony says, leaning over, and a stream of buttons comes roaring out of her top.
"Whoops."
They keep coming, a mountain spilling over the antipile. She starts laughing and laughing, showing us her very neat and clean gums while she howls,
"Ooh, I got you! I got all of you!"
"That's it,"
Armelio says, throwing down his cards.
"Every Monday the card tournament always gets messed up. I quit."
"Do you resign your position as president?"
Bobby asks him.
"Forget you, buddy."
My tongue hurts from so much biting. It might not have been a regulation game, but it definitely had as many emotional ups and downs as the poker on TV. I clean up with Bobby and Joni. Tonight, when I get in bed, I'm too busy wondering about what a Doomba is and when Ebony stuck the buttons in her breasts and what that even feels like and Noelle and the fact that I get to see her tomorrow to do anything but sleep.
Part 8. 6 North, Tuesday. Chapter 36. The next day, Humble isn't around for breakfast. I sit with Bobby and Johnny, collect my shirt, perfectly folded, and put it on the back of my chair. I drink the day's first Sweet Touch Knee tea and ask what they did with Humble.
Oh, he's happy. They went and gave him some serious drugs, probably.
Like what?
You know about drugs? Pills?
Sure, I'm a teenager.
Well, Humble is psychotic and depressed, Bobby explains. So he gets SSRIs, lithium, Xanax.
Vicodin, Johnny says.
Vicodin, Valium. He's like the most heavily medicated guy in here.
So when they took him away, they gave him all that stuff?
No, that's what he gets normally. When they take him away, they give him shots, I bet. Ativan.
I had that.
You did? That'll knock you right out. Was it fun?
It was okay. I don't want to be taking stuff like that all the time.
Huh. That's the right attitude, says Johnny. We got a little sidetracked by drugs, me and Bobby.
Yeah, no kidding,
Bobby says. He shakes his head, looks up, chews, and folds his hands.
Sidetracked isn't even the word. We were off the face of this planet. We were holed up 24 hours a day. I missed so many concerts.
I'm sorry.
Santana, Zeppelin. What's that later one with the junkie? Nirvana. I could have seen Rush, Van Halen, Motley Crue, everybody. All this back when it cost $10 to get in. And I was too much of a garbage head to care.
What's a garbage head?
Somebody who does anything, whatever, Bobby explains. You give it to me, I'd do it, just to see what it was like.
Geez, I'll admit that it sounds a little sexy. I see the appeal.
But maybe that's why I'm in here, to meet guys who take the appeal away. Do you think Humble stages scenes so he can get drugs? I'm spreading cream cheese on a bagel now. I started ordering bagels times two for breakfast. They are far and away the best option.
That's the kind of thing you just can't speculate about, Bobby says. Oh, here comes your girl.
She rushes in with a tray and sits down in a corner, drinks her juice, dips at her oatmeal. She glances over at me. I wave as lightly as I can, so people think maybe I have a spasmodic twitch. I haven't seen her since Sunday. I don't know what she did all of yesterday. I don't know how she eats if she doesn't leave her room. Same with Muqtada. Maybe they deliver food to her? There's still so much I don't know about this place.
Huh, she is a cutie,
Johnny says.
Come on, man, don't be saying that. She's like 13, Bobby says.
So, he's like 13.
I'm 15.
Well, let him say it then, Bobby says to Johnny. Leave the 13-year-olds to the 13-year-olds.
I'm 15, I interject.
Craig, you should probably wait a few years, because sex at 13 can mess you up.
I'm 15.
Huh. I was doing stuff when I was 15, says Johnny.
Yeah, says Bobby, with guys.
Pause.
If Ronnie were here, he would say it out loud. Pause.
Huh. This food sucks.
Johnny pushes his waffles aside.
Kid, he says, just do this for me. If you get with her, freak her a little bit. You know what I mean?
Stop it, Bobby looks at Johnny. You got a daughter that age.
I'd set him up with my daughter, too. Probably do her good.
Wait, how do you guys even know about this? I only talked with her once, and it was really short. Nothing happened.
Yeah, but you came into the activity center with her.
We notice everything.
I shake my head.
What's going on today? At 11, the guitar guy is coming. Johnny here will play.
Oh, yeah?
If the inclination hits.
I finish up my bagel. I know what I'm going to do until the guitar guy comes. I'm going to make brain maps. I kind of have an audience now. Joni lent me some high-quality pencils and glossy paper since I helped her out with cleanup after the card tournament debacle, so I can draw whenever I want. When I do, people line up to watch me work. Ebony is my biggest fan. She seems to like nothing better than to sit behind me and see the maps fill out in the people's heads. I think she likes them more than I do. The professor is big into them, too. She says my art is extraordinary, and I could sell it on the street if I wanted. I'm branching out into variations. Maps in people's bodies, maps in animals, maps connecting two people together. It comes naturally, and it passes the time, and it feels a little more accomplished than playing cards. I'm going to work on my art, I tell the guys.
If I had half your initiative, things would have turned out different, says Bobby.
Yeah. I want to be you when I grow up, says Johnny.
I walk out with my tray. Chapter 37. The guitar guy's name is Neil. He has a black goatee and a black shirt and suede pants, and he looks totally stoned. He comes in with a vintage-looking electric guitar. I don't know brands, but it looks like something the Beatles would have had, and plugs it into his amp on a chair before we file in. There's something I didn't expect in the room. Instruments on all the seats around the circle, and people run for the ones they want. We have visitors today, nursing students who are learning what it's like to work in a psych hospital, and they wade in with us and take seats and mediate disputes over who gets the bongo drums, the conga drums, the two sticks you bang together, the washboard, and the coveted seat by the electric keyboard. Hey, everybody, Neil sways. Welcome to musical exploration. He's playing simple chords in a studded beat that I think is supposed to be reggae, and after a while I realize it's I Shot the Sheriff. He starts singing, and he's just got a terrible voice, like an albino Jamaican frog. But we chime in as best we can with our voices and whatever instruments we ended up with. Armelio bangs on his chair with some sticks and gets bored, leaves the room. Becca, the big girl, asks if she can trade her bongos, the little ones, for my congas, the big ones, and I switch. I try to play the fills that come after the choruses in I Shot the Sheriff, and Neil recognizes that I'm trying, gives me a chance to shine each time, but I can't pull them off. Noelle, directly across from me, shakes maracas and her hair, smiling. I occasionally fire off a bongo fill just for her, but I'm not sure if she notices. The star of the show is Jimmy. I didn't have any idea that the high-pitched noises he made were singing. Once the music starts, he goes right into the Jimmy verse, banging against his washboard and letting it all hang out in a piercing falsetto that's surprisingly on key. The thing is, he doesn't sing I Shot the Sheriff. He sings only one phrase.
How sweet it is!
Doesn't matter where the song is or what it is, Jimmy will hum along to the tune as necessary, and then, as soon as there's a break that he can be heard over, remind us,
how sweet it is!
He sounds a little like Mr. Hankey from South Park. The nursing students, who are all West Indian like Nurse Monica, and young unlike her, absolutely adore him and give him big smiles, which increases his activity. Jimmy may have only a few sentences in his repertoire, but he knows how to keep going when pretty girls pay attention to him. I send out a fill for him. He sings back. I'm convinced that some part of him knows we came in together. When I Shot the Sheriff finishes in a crescendo of percussion that seems destined never to end, everybody wants to hit that last note, including me, Neil starts in on the Beatles. I want to hold your hand. I feel fine. The Beatles are apparently the cue for people to get up and dance. It begins with Becca at Neil's left. A nursing student pulls her up, she leaves her conga aside, and starts wiggling her big butt in the middle of the circle. We yell out encouragement. She turns red and grins, and when she sits down, it's Bobby's turn. He moves like John Travolta in Pulp Fiction, shaking his hips with a laconic tilt, turning his feet more than his body.
Johnny refuses to dance, but bobs his head. The nursing students dance with one another and with Neil. Then it comes around to me. I hate dancing. I've never been good at it, and I don't mean that in the traditional scared teenager way. I'm really not good. But a nursing student has both her hands out to me, and Noelle is across the room. I put my bongos aside and try to think about what I'm doing as I do it. I know that you're not supposed to think about dancing. What is that stupid expression? Sing like no one's listening, dance like no one's watching, whatever. I want to dance like Bobby did, and I know the way to do that is to move my hips, so I focus there and think a lot. I don't think about my arms. I don't think about my legs. I don't think about my head. I think about shaking my hips back and forth and then in and out and then in circles. And all of a sudden, the nursing student is behind me. I had my eyes closed. And there's another one in front of me, making a Craig Gilner sandwich. And I'm dancing as if I were one of those cool club guys with two chicks. Heck, I have two chicks. I hold my hand out to Noelle in a fit of confidence. She gets up, and we go to the middle of the floor and shake our hips at each other, never touching, never talking, just smiling and keeping our eyes locked. I think she's actually looking to me for tips. So I mouth to her, "Shake your hips." She does, her arms as out of place as my own, hanging at her sides with nowhere sexy to go. Where are you supposed to put your arms when you dance? It's like the universal question. I guess you're supposed to put them around someone. When it's Jimmy's turn to dance, he gets up, throws down his washboard, and puts his finger over his lips at Neil. Neil stops playing. Jimmy does a pirouette over the unaccompanied wild percussion that we've built up and lands on his knee.
How sweet it is!
Chapter 38. When Neil's guitar is packed up, he comes over.
Good job with those drum fills.
Yeah?
Yeah. I haven't seen you before. What's your name?
Craig.
You had good rhythm. You got people moving. I hope you don't mind me asking this, but why are you here? You seem pretty, you know, good.
I have depression, I say. I had it really bad. I'm getting out in 2 days.
Great, wonderful. That's great to hear. I have a lot of friends with that.
He nods at me.
Once you're out, do you ever think you might consider volunteering in a place like this?
Volunteering with what?
Well, do you play instruments?
No.
You probably could. You have a good musical sense.
Thanks. I do art.
What kind of art?
I lead him out of the activity center, past the nurse's station and the phone, to my room, where Muqtada is in bed.
Craig, I hear you all in music room, he says.
You should have come.
Neil smiles at him.
Hello.
I pull my stack of my brain maps out for Neil. I do these. I give him a whole armful, maybe 15 of the best of them by now. The one on top is a duo, a guy and girl with a bridge connecting the cities in their minds.
These are cool, Neil says.
He flips through them.
Have you done these for a long time?
That depends, I say. 10 years or a couple days, depending on how you count it.
Can I have one?
I don't know if I can give them away for free.
Ha! Listen, for real, here's my card.
Neil pulls out a simple black-and-white business card that identifies him as a guitar therapist.
Whenever you're out of here, and I'm sure it'll be soon, give me a call, and we can talk about volunteering, and I'm serious, I might like to buy some of these. How old are you? You should be on the teen floor, right, but they're renovating?
I'm young, I say.
I'm glad you came here and got the help you needed, Neil says, and he shakes my hand in that way that people do in here, to remind themselves that you're the patient and they're the doctor slash volunteer slash employee.
They like you and they genuinely want you to do better, but when they shake your hand, you feel that distance, that slight disconnect, because they know that you're still broken somewhere, that you might snap at any moment. Neil leaves the room, and I spend the rest of the day drawing and playing cards with Armelio. Around 1:30, I call Mom, tell her about the sing-along and the card tournament and how I danced, and she affirms that I'm sounding better, and that she heard from Dr. Mahmood that Thursday is a solid day, and she and Dad will be ready when it's time to pick me up. Even though it's only a few blocks back to my house, they have to pick me up in person. In the late afternoon, while I'm playing spit with Armelio and getting crushed, Smitty pops in and tells me I have a visitor. I know it's not Mom or Dad or Sarah. They're coming tomorrow for one last time when Dad brings Blade 2. I hope to God it isn't Aaron or one of his friends. It's Nia. I see her through the big window in the dining room, looking like she's been crying or she's about to cry, or both. She comes slinking timidly down the hall, and I walk away from Armelio without a word to go up to her. Chapter 39. What are you doing here? I ask, then pause. That's really a question other people should be asking me. What do you think? She has on light makeup that makes her lips sparkle and her cheeks a slight Asian red. Her hair is drawn back to accent the curved proportions of her face. I'm here to see you. Why? She turns away. I'm having a really hard time right now, okay, Craig? All right. I get in step with her. Come on, the best place to talk is over here. I lead her through the hall with a familiarity and confidence that she seems surprised by. I guess I'm a veteran here now, sort of an alpha male, which reminds me, still no humble. Here. I sit her in the chairs where I sat with my parents and Noel. What's going on? She puts her hands on her knees. She has on a little beige combat outfit with black boots. She looks like a Soviet soldier recruit. The light comes in behind her and makes her skin sparkle. I've seen her in this getup before. It's one of her particularly hottest ones. When you bind up little breasts in guy-type clothing, they're just that much more intriguing. Aaron and I broke up, she says. No. I open my eyes wide. Yes, Craig. She wipes her face. After that night when he called here, and you told him I was on Prozac? What? Are you saying that it's my fault? I'm not saying it's anybody's fault. She chops her arms against her thighs and takes a deep breath. The professor peers out of her room. Who are you? Nia turns. I'm Amanda, she says. I'm Craig's friend. Well, we're trying to have a conversation. I'm really sorry. Nia wipes her hair. It's okay, but you shouldn't yell. Solomon will come out. Who's Solomon? Nia turns to me. Is he dangerous? Nobody here is dangerous, I say. And as I say it, I put my hand over Nia's on her thigh. I'm not sure why I do it. To reassure her? I guess it's just an instinct, a reaction. Subconsciously, I suppose, I'm thinking that it's a really hot thigh, and that I would love to have my hand there without her hand serving as a buffer. I haven't really gotten the chance to touch any girl's thigh, and Nia's beige ones seem just about as alluring as thighs get. I even think it's a sexy word, thigh. Craig, hello? Sorry, I was spacing out. She looks down at my hand and gives a little smirk. She doesn't move it away. You're funny. I was asking you if you like it here. It's not bad. It's better than school. I believe that. Now her hand, her other hand, is on top of my hand on top of her thigh. I think of the dancing sandwich I was in before in the activity lounge. I feel how warm she is, and remember how I noticed that at the party, eons ago. I've been thinking about going to a place like this. What? I pull my body away, but keep my hand under hers. What do you mean? I've been thinking of, you know, checking myself in, spending some time here, or somewhere like it, recentering like you. Nia, I shake my head. You can't just come in here because you want to. Isn't that what you did? No. What did you do then? She tilts her head. I had like a medical emergency, I explain. I called up the suicide hotline and they sent me here. Nia leans back. You called the suicide hotline? She holds my hand up, clutches it.
Oh, Craig!
I look at my crotch. I'm springing up. I can't help it. She's so close. This face is so close to mine, and it's the same face I've jerked off to so many times. I've conditioned myself to want this face. I want her. I feel her on me, and I want her right now in her little Russian army outfit. I want to see what she looks like with it off. I want to see what she looks like with it half off.
I didn't realize, she continues. I knew you wanted to kill yourself. I never knew you wanted to kill yourself. I never would have told Aaron that you called me from that weird number if I'd known it was so serious.
Well, what do you think people come here for? My hand twitches around hers.
To get better, she asks.
Yeah, exactly. But you have to be really bad before they make you get better here.
Nia swishes her head, and her hair slides around her dark eyes.
I thought that you got bad because of me, and I thought I could make you better.
She's so cute. The way she holds her face, it's like she always knows the best angles. We hold each other's eyes. I see myself in hers. I look expectant, ready, eager, stupid, willing to do anything. I don't like how I look. Humble wouldn't like it either. It doesn't have any strength or will. But I don't have any strength or will when I'm with her. I don't have any choice. We're going to do whatever she wants.
What about Aaron? I ask. I told you.
She drops almost to a whisper.
I broke up with him.
You broke up with him? I want it clarified.
It was mutual. Is that important?
Permanently broke up?
Looks like it.
Don't you think it's a little soon for you to be coming in here and, like, touching me?
She shakes her head and purses her lower lip.
I've been thinking about you since we talked on the phone Friday night. And now I know you so much better. You've told me all this stuff about you, and you're really, I don't know, you're mature. You're not like all these other people with their stupid little problems. You're, like, really screwed up,
she giggles.
In the good way. The way that gives experience.
Huh. I'm not sure what to say. No, wait, I know what to say. Go away, leave, I don't need you. I finished with you on the phone before. I met a girl here who's cooler and smarter. But when you've got a really gorgeous girl in front of you and she's biting her lip and talking low and smiling and you're hard, what are you going to do?
Huh.
Well, I'm back to stuttering. Maybe it was Nia that made me stutter. I'm sweating, too.
Do you want to show me your room?
She asks. That's a bad idea. It's a bad idea just as much as it's a bad idea to skip meals or stay awake in bed in the morning or stop taking your Zoloft. But there's no hope for me now. I cede control to my lower half, which is actually pointing toward my room, and lead Nia to it.
Chapter 40. Muqtada isn't in the room. I can't believe it. It's like the first time since I've been here. I look at his rumpled sheets and try to make out a human form, but there isn't enough bulk to account for him. I peek in the bathroom. Nothing.
You have a roommate? Nia asks.
Yeah, he's usually here.
Ew!
She waves in front of her nose.
Something smells.
The roommate's Egyptian. I don't think he wears deodorant.
Me either.
I make like I'm cleaning up my stuff near my bed, but really I'm just taking my brain maps and flipping them over.
You don't get a TV?
No.
Do you read in here?
I like to read out in the hall with other people. My sister gave me a Star magazine, but the nurses took it away to read themselves.
She walks toward me, looking up idly glib and innocent.
Do you get lonely here?
Actually, no, I tell her. I move hair that is stuck to my forehead. I'm really sweating now. It's very social here. I made friends.
Who?
That lady you were talking to outside?
Her? She's so rude. She totally horned in on our conversation.
She thinks someone sprayed insecticide in her apartment, Nia. She gets paranoid.
Really? That's crazy. That's really crazy.
I don't know. She might be right. Nia is a few feet away from me now. Her shoulders are tilted up at me. I could pick her up and throw her on my unmade bed just like Aaron has done for the past 2 years. These words we're saying are just a front. She's a college professor. There might be something to it.
Craig?
She's right in front of me now. Do you remember when you called me? She touches my forehead.
Oh, you're sweating.
Yeah, I do that when I get nervous.
Are you okay? You're really sweating.
I'm all right. I wipe it away.
Seriously, Craig, that is gross.
She scowls, then gets back to where she was.
When you called me, you remember how you asked what I would do if you came over and grabbed me and kissed me?
Yeah. My stomach is tight. The man is down there pulling on the rope. I thought I had him beat. I'd been eating so well.
I'd let you, she says. You know I would.
Now she's got her glossy, sparkly lips turned up at me, and I feel this amazing dichotomy going on. It's almost like before I came in here, when I was in my mom's bed, when my brain wanted to die but my heart wanted to live. Now, quite literally, everything from my stomach up wants to run to the bathroom, to throw up, to talk to Armelio or Bobby or Smitty, to kick Nia out, to get ready for my second date with Noelle. But the bottom half has been denied too long. It's been ready for this for 2 years, and it knows what it wants. It says that the real cause of all my problems is that I haven't been satisfying it. And these aren't any lips, either, that I'm presented with to rectify my lack of play. These are lips that I've had access to for years in my mind. I've done terrible, horrible things to these lips in the privacy of my bathroom. So screw it. You've got to try sometime. I lean down and grab Nia and push her back on Muqtada's bed. I didn't mean to. I meant to turn her around and put her on my bed, but she happened to be in front of me and I couldn't switch directions in mid-grab. I cover her with my thin body and kiss her upper lip first, encase it in my lips, then do the lower one, then try to do them both at once, only that doesn't really work. It's like trying to pull the lips off her head, and she laughs, which gives me her beautiful smile to kiss. The hard white teeth, I don't mind. And then I use my tongue the way I've seen in movies, and put my hands on her soldier outfit, and feel what I don't have, and have wanted for years pressing back at me, taut and yielding at the same time. Two of them.
Mmm,
Nia mms, putting her small hands on the back of my head. She feels my hair. I shake against her. I can't believe how good it feels.
This is how good it feels? Why the hell did I ever get depressed?
I remember what Aaron said about the inside of a girl's cheek feeling like another place, and I lick the insides of hers. She shivers. She likes it. It's like Aaron said. She likes sex. Her tongue becomes a jittery dart flicking in and out of my mouth. I feel the ring, a little metal bubble, something to add texture, foreign and dirty. Forget it. Let's do it. I reach up to the buttons on her outfit. My eyes are closed, because if I open them, I think I might get a little too excited and ruin my pants, and Mom didn't bring me any pants. Darn, the button I'm grabbing is in the middle. Up one.
No, that's not it. One more.
God, she pulls away. I always wanted to hook up in a hospital. What? I look up at her chin. I'm still on top of her on Muqtada's bed, my legs sticking way off, almost hitting my bed.
This was totally on my checklist.
She looks down.
Me and Aaron never did anything like this.
That's a body blow to my whole body. The lower half that wanted this and the upper half that warned me about it. I can't think what to say. Please don't compare me to Aaron. Please don't mention Aaron. What checklist? So I say,
sex,
I hear from the doorway. It's Muqtada.
Sex. Sex in my bed. Children make sex in my bed.
He runs over to us. I jump off Nia and hold my hands up, thinking he's going to hit me. But he grabs me and holds me close to his square, smelly body and carries me like a girder to the corner of the room. Muqtada.
Craig, who is that? Nia yells.
I live here. You terrible girl, corrupt my friend.
Muqtada puts me down, turns and stands with his arms crossed at Nia, guarding me.
You leave.
He points at the open door.
There's no door?
Nia peers at it. On some kind of incredible girl time, she's gotten up, smoothed out her outfit, and collected her purse from near Muqtada's pillow. She already has her cell phone out. It's blinking at her side. She's gesturing at me with it. There's a door, yeah, I say, standing on tiptoes to talk over Muqtada's shoulder. We just didn't close it.
Don't talk to her.
Muqtada turns and shakes his finger at me.
She try and make sex in my bed.
It wasn't just me, okay?
Nia bends her face in at him. He turns back.
In case you didn't notice, Craig was on top of me. And we weren't going to have sex.
Woman is temptress. My wife leave me. I know.
Craig, I'm out of here.
Okay, I answer into Muqtada's back. I try and think how to sum it up. I like making out with you, but I don't really like you as a person.
Yeah, same here, says Nia.
What is going on in here? It's Smitty. He shadows the door. Muqtada, what are you doing? And excuse me, young lady.
I was just leaving, Nia says.
You're the visitor for Craig, right?
Not anymore.
What happened in here?
Nothing, says Muqtada. Everything fine.
He steps aside, turns, and gives me what I guess he thinks is a wink through his glasses.
Yeah, absolutely, I catch on. Muqtada just came in and was surprised to see two people in the room.
Well, he should be, says Smitty, because you're not supposed to have visitors in your room. Don't let it happen again, okay?
No problem.
Yeah, because you won't be seeing me again, says Nia, and Smitty gives her a disbelieving look as she walks away from him, stomping down the hall, slamming her shoes with each step. He shrugs at us. All right, he says to her back. Sign out on your way out, miss.
Craig, what kind of girl is going to put up with this crap?
Nia turns around, spreads her arms, and gestures to the hall as if she owns it while she backs away.
Be quiet, Dumba,
yells President Armelio from somewhere. She turns back around and doesn't give any more looks back.
Huh,
Smitty says. Lovely girl. Everything cool, guys? We nod like kindergartners.
Yes.
Don't let anything like that happen again, Craig.
I won't.
Otherwise, you'll be here a long time. Smitty walks away from the door. Muqtada waits a few moments and then turns to me.
Craig, I am sorry. I only have very important beliefs about sex.
No, I understand. You did a good thing.
You are not in trouble, yes?
No, I'm fine. You handled it perfectly, man. I put out my hand to get a slap from him, but he misinterprets that as a handshake attempt, so I take the initiative and turn it into a hug, a big, smelly one. His glasses smack against me.
I am out trying to get Egyptian music in hospital, he says. You give me idea, but they have none. Now I rest.
And he climbs back in bed, rearranges his sheet, curls into a fetal position, and stares through me. I glance at the door. Right there, with her bright green eyes wide open, is Noelle. I rush out to talk to her, but she flies down to her room and closes her door. I run up to it and knock, but there's no answer. And when Smitty passes me, shooting a look, I have to stop knocking. I check the clock in the hall and sigh. It's 5. 2 hours until our second date. Chapter 41.
I only have a couple of questions for you, Noel says, walking up fast at 7 o'clock as I sit in the chair that I've come to call my conference chair, since I meet with so many people in it. I wonder what else has happened in this chair. People have probably peed on it, licked it, drummed their heads against it, and writhed around in it, spouting gibberish. That gives me comfort. It feels like a chair with some history. I didn't think Noel was going to show up, so I almost didn't come. But then I decided I didn't want any regrets. I'm done with those. Regrets are an excuse for people who have failed. When I get out in the world from now on, if I start to regret something, I'm going to remind myself that whatever I could have done, it won't change the fact that I was in a psychiatric hospital. This right here is the biggest regret I could ever have, and it's not so bad. Noelle seems to be looking at me for comment, but I'm amazed at how she looks. New clothes, a pair of tight blue jeans cut down dangerously low, and a sliver of white underwear sticking out above them. The underwear looks like it has pink stars on it. Do girls' underwear really have pink stars? And I almost stare, before my eyes are drawn by the soft curve of her stomach to her T-shirt, which is wrapped against her with some kind of mystical female force, reading, "I hate boys." How come girls are coming to me dressed all hot all of a sudden? Above the shirt is her face, bordered by blonde hair pulled back and highlighted by her cuts. Why do you wear that T-shirt? I ask. Is that a message to me? No, I hate boys, not you. And this is one reason why. They're so arrogant. Why is that? She stands with her hands on her hips. Well, I think. Do you want, like, a real, honest answer? My brain is working better than it did before. It has bagels and soup and sugar and chicken in it. It's firing almost like it used to. No, Craig, I want a big, dumb, fake answer. Noelle rolls her eyes. I think her breasts roll in sync with them. Girl's breasts are so amazing. Wait, you didn't ask a question, I smirk. 1 point for you. We're not playing the game, Craig. We were going to, but I'm too mad. Okay, well, darn. I start. What were we talking about? Why guys are so arrogant. Right. Well, you know, we're born into the world seeing that we're just a little bit... We tend to have things a little bit easier than girls. And we tend to assume, therefore, that the world was built for us. And that we're, you know, the culmination of everything that came before us. And then we get told that having a little bit of this attitude is called balls, and that balls are good, and we kind of take it from there. Wow, you are honest, she says, sitting down. An honest asshole. Yes, she sat down. Who the hell was that girl? A girl I know. She's pretty. It's amazing how girls can say this and make it the most withering insult. Is she your girlfriend? No, I don't have a girlfriend. Never had a girlfriend. So she was just a girl you were hooking up with in your room? You saw, huh? I saw everything, from out here to your roommate's bed. What, you were following me? I'm not allowed? Well, no. You don't like it? She leans in. You don't like some poor little girl? She throws on a little Bo Peep voice, fluffs her hair. Following big, manly Craig around the ward. It's not a ward, it's a psych hospital. But yes, yes, I do like you following me around. Yes, that's awesome. I can't believe I didn't notice you. I think of the flashes of time with Nia, if I ever glanced down the hall or checked behind me. You were in a state of excitement, that's why. Well, you want to know who she was?
No, I lost interest.
You did? No, tell me. Okay, okay. She was this girl I've known for a long time, and she came in here...
Just overcome with lust for you?
Yeah, sure, exactly. She came in overcome with lust, and I took advantage of her. I flick my hand. No, what really happened is she came in here lonely and confused, I think, and thinking that she belonged in a place like this.
That was pretty funny when your roommate caught you. That kind of made the whole thing worthwhile.
I'm glad you think so.
You're never going to be a good cheater. You're going to be one of those guys who gets caught on the first try.
Is that good?
You didn't even close the door. How do you know the girl?
She was my best friend's girlfriend since we were like 13.
How old are you now?
15.
Me too.
I look at her and you. There's something about people who are the same age. It's like you got piped out in the same shipment. You've got to stick together. Because deep down I believe my year was a special year. It produced me.
So you macked your best friend's girlfriend?
No, they broke up.
When?
A few days ago.
She moves fast.
I think out loud, she's just one of these girls who's never really not had a boyfriend.
Sometimes we call those girls sluts. Do you think she had a boyfriend when she was 8?
Ew.
Maybe she was letting...
Stop. I don't want to hear it.
It happens.
Noelle looks at me. I nod and pause and let that sink in. It does happen.
How are you? I ask. You think you're really smart, don't you?
I laugh. No. That's one of the reasons I came in here, actually, thinking I was dumb.
Why would you think that? You're in a smart school.
I wasn't doing well there.
What were you getting?
93s.
Oh.
Noelle nods.
Yeah.
I fold my arms. I think you're really smart. You probably get good grades.
Not really.
She puts her chin in her palms like someone in a painting.
You're not very good at giving compliments.
What?
I'm smart. Come on.
You're attractive, too, I say. Does that work? You're attractive.
Did I say that already? I said it the other day, right? Attractive? Craig, real estate is attractive. Houses.
Sorry, you're beautiful. What about that?
I can't believe I'm saying it.
We'll both be out of here in 2 days. That's why I'm saying it. No regrets.
Beautiful's all right. There are better ones.
Okay, cool. I crack my neck.
Ew!
What?
Don't do that. Especially when you're about to compliment me.
Fine, okay. What are better words than beautiful?
She puts on a southern accent. Gorgeous.
Okay, you're gorgeous.
That sounds terrible. Do it my way. Gorgeous.
I do it.
You can't even do a southern accent? Oh my gosh, are you even from America?
Give me a break, I'm from here.
Brooklyn?
Yeah.
This neighborhood?
Yeah.
I have friends here.
We should meet up sometime.
You're so terrible. Try some more compliments.
Okay. I dig down deep. I got nothing.
You don't know anymore?
I'm not good at words.
See, this is why the math nerds don't get girls. Who said I was a math nerd? I told you my grades suck.
You might be one of those nerds who's not smart. Those are the worst kind.
Listen, I stop her. I'm really glad you're here talking with me, and I've met a lot of people in here.
Uh-oh, she says. Is this the part where it gets all serious?
Yes, I say.
And when I say it, the way that I say it, I see that she understands that I'm serious about being serious. I can be serious now. I've been through some serious shit, and I can be serious like somebody older.
I like you a lot,
I start.
No regrets.
Because you're funny and smart, and because you seem to like me. I know that's not a good reason, but I can't help it. If a girl likes me, I tend to like her back.
She doesn't say anything.
I dip my head at her.
Do you want to say anything?
No, this is fine. Keep going.
Well, okay. I've been thinking about how to put this. I like you for all this stuff, but I also kind of like you for the cuts on your face.
Oh, no. Are you a fetishist?
What?
Are you like a blood fetishist? There was one of them in here before. He wanted to make me like his Queen of the Night or something.
No.